Hello and welcome to a President's Cup 2024 preview here on Musings on Golf. My name is Kelly Elbin, and I'm flying solo today as my partner Bob Bupka is a little under the weather. Looking forward to welcoming Bob back next week, and so excited that Ian Baker Finch is joining us today to look ahead to the 15th President's Cup, which begins tomorrow, September 26th, at Royal Montreal Golf Club. Hey, I got to tell you guys, Bob and I had a terrific interview with Ian Baker Finch last week. Fascinating guy, terrific guy, lots of insights, and certainly a lot of personal history as it relates to these matches between a 12-man team from the United States against a 12-man international squad. You certainly know Ian Baker Finch best for his outstanding work as part of the CBS Sports golf coverage team over the past 18 years. But Ian Baker Finch won the 1991 Open Championship. He's a major champion. Unfortunately, kind of lost his game and actually retired from competitive golf 6 years later, 1997, and turned to broadcasting and has been terrific ever since. But Ian Baker Finch was an assistant captain under two international team captains, his fellow Aussie Peter Thompson and Gary Player. So just a lot of really terrific insights into the team room, the psychology of the event, and some great memories for me in the interview that you'll hear in just a minute. So the matches are, they're similar in a lot of ways to the Ryder Cup. You have 12-man teams as you do with the Ryder Cup. Obviously, this is the U.S. against the rest of the world, an international team comprised of players from everywhere but Europe. Some differences, though. The Ryder Cup matches are Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They're 3 days. For the President's Cup, it's 4 days. They play a four-ball best ball match on Thursday. Then they have another 18-hole match on Friday. Then they play two matches on Saturday and 12 singles on Sunday. Whereas the Ryder Cup has 28 points up for grab, President's Cup has 30 points up for grab. And maybe what's a really defining difference between the two in the Ryder Cup, if the match ends in a tie, the team that held the Ryder Cup going in retains the Ryder Cup, not the case at the President's Cup. If it ends in a tie, the two teams share the cup. Now, I think the international squad would be happy to do that because it's been very one-sided to this point. As I said, this will be the 15th President's Cup. The U.S. record is 12-1-1. So, yeah, it's lopsided on the scoreboard. But I have to tell you, the last time it was played overseas, and because of COVID, that was in 2019, played over in Australia. Tiger Woods was the U.S. captain, and they rallied on the last day. The U.S. did very close. They won 16-14. In 2015, when it was played in South Korea, the U.S., yes, the Americans won, but it was 15.5-14.5. So it, again, as so often is the case in these matches, it comes down to putting. It comes down to emotions. There's always going to be ebbs and flows to it. If you look at the U.S. team with Scheffler and Schauffele and that group, it's pretty darn impressive. But I like a lot of what the international team is doing. I know that Adam Scott has spoken quite a bit about feeling like he's let down the international team and not maybe played his best over the years. I think he's going to play really well this week. You've got Tom Kim, who kind of burst on the scene 2 years ago when the U.S. Won at Quail Hollow. I think he's going to play very well this week. But maybe the X factor of all is, whereas you really haven't had a lot of home field advantage in the President's Cup as you do in the Ryder Cup, I think you have some of that this year. Mike Weir, Canadian, is the captain. Being played at Royal Montreal, you have three really good Canadian players, with Corey Connors, Mackenzie Hughes, and Taylor Pendrith on the team. Nick Taylor, frankly, should have been on the team as well. And Ian Baker Finch kind of alludes to that at the same time. Nonetheless, I think the Canadians are going to turn out really well. The U.S. is going to need to have a quick start in this. I think it's going to be, again, super close as it's been in these last four away games, if you will, for the United States team. I do think the U.S. depth is a little bit better. There was some question about Max Homa, why he was picked as opposed to Billy Horschel. However, Homa was 4-0-0 in his first President's Cup in 2022. Horschel maybe stuck it maybe a little bit to Jim Furyk and not picking him while he going out and winning then that with that great putt in that playoff with Rory McIlroy last week at the BMW PGA Championship overseas. So I think it'll be close. I think the better team is the U.S. A lot can happen, but I can see a 15.5, 14.5, 16-14 U.S. victory. So I'll stick with that. Again, a great interview here with Ian Baker Finch. I know you all will enjoy it. There's a lot to him. Very likable guy, very personable, and very knowledgeable with great history of the President's Cup. And you'll hear from Ian right after these messages from our partners. Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com. Celebrating its 30th year, the South Florida PGA Golf Pass offers the ultimate summer golf experience with special access to more than 100 private, semi-private, and public golf facilities. From May 1st through October 31st, Golf Pass members can enjoy special low rates, exclusive member-only outings, special offers, and more. For just $60, you can purchase the South Florida PGA Golf Pass and instantly gain access to all these great benefits through the member-only app. It's simple. Pay, download, play. Visit sfpgagolf.com/golfpass for more information. That's sfpgagolf.com/golfpass.
You flew the trap on 6. You birdied 12 and 13. You closed out the match 4-3. From your numbers to your windows, everything was dialed. That was yesterday. Outperform your best. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Bob, our special guest today is a major golf champion, an instrumental part of CBS Sports golf coverage, and someone who knows the President's Cup all too well. Four times he has been the right-hand man to the captain of the international team. And with the 15th edition of the President's Cup now upon us, he joins us to look back at and preview the big event this week at Royal Montreal Golf Club. What a thrill to welcome Ian Baker Finch to Musings on Golf. Ian, how are you?
I'm very well. Kelly, thanks very much. Good to be with you and with Bob. Looking forward to this.
And thank you enough, Mr. Finch. But I'm going to do it anyway. I said I shouldn't do it, but I'm going to do it. I'm prepared to get my ego busted by Mr. Ian Baker Finch when I ask him the following question. Do you remember where we played golf together? That's enough silence. You're embarrassing me already.
I remember we did, and I remember we had a great time together over the years when I was playing out on tour in the 80s and 90s. I'm trying to think where we played. Did we play in a pro-am at one of the tournaments?
No, we had a round at Williamsburg.
Oh, okay. And when we used to play there in it was the Michelob, and then it changed. But right. Yeah, I should remember, but it was so bloody hot. Maybe my memory has faded.
I anticipated that, but it's still one of the thrills I had. Matter of fact, I think, for a fact, you might be the only Open champion that I've ever played a round of golf with, and I consider it a distinct honor, and I've always considered you a close friend and one of the real good guys out there, Ian. You bring a nice combination of knowledge and enjoyment, which is not easy to do, but you do it very well.
Thank you very much, Bob. And I love the game. And hopefully that shows through in my commentary now. And I've seen it from both sides, as you know, sir. I saw it from when I was playing great golf and thought I'd never hit another bad shot, to when I wasn't playing so great and thought I'd never hit another good shot. So I try and bring that unique perspective to the announce booth, and I think I've been doing it now for more than a couple of decades. And some will say that I'm not hard enough on the players, but you know all too well, the players are hard enough on themselves. We don't need to be hard on them as well.
That's very well put. And you know what the amazing thing, you basically summed up the sport of golf. When you're playing well, you don't think you're never going to play bad. And as you accurately said, when you're playing bad, Ian, you never think you're going to play well again.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's one of the real beauties of the sport.
I 100% agree. And everyone that's played the game for a long time, like you and I, have experienced both sides of the coin. It's a great game. It's a game for life. But there's lots of ups and downs, peaks and valleys. And, you know, you get through it. And you learn to be a little bit more humble when you do experience the occasional peak, that's for sure.
Ian, is golf, is it the most mental of games because of all that?
Well, I believe so, and so many other superior athletes of other sports say the same thing, that they play golf because it doesn't injure them for their other sports, but they play golf for the mental, the process you have to go through to be good at it. It's a great training, I think, for life and for any other activity you wish to excel with. So, yeah, I do think, I'm sure there's a lot of other sports, and maybe a lot of other sports stars would say, hey, you know, I got to make this free throw to win the ring, or I've got to serve this in to win Wimbledon, or all those sorts of things. But golf it's 5 hours, unfortunately, sometimes 5.5 hours. That's another subject. But it's a long time out there persevering and dealing with your own thoughts and abilities or inabilities at times.
You know, Ian, you got quite a legacy as assistant captain, 96, 03, 05, 07. What makes the President's Cup so special?
Well, for me, it's special because I was at the start of it all when we were talking to Beamon and Fincham about how the fact that the leading international players were not included in any of these team competitions. And Greg Norman was number one in the world. We had Nicky Price, I believe, in 94, was number one in the world, but certainly top five leading into it. We had Wayne Grady and myself as major winners, Steve Elkington. Vijay Singh was Rookie of the Year back in 93. We had an amazing amount of players. Ernie Els was coming through at that time. I believe he won the US Open in 94. So we were all thinking, why aren't we involved in this? Maybe we can have a round robin with the Ryder Cup. And the first President's Cup was 1994. I needed to be picked and I wasn't. We were asked to pick, or Captain David Graham was asked to pick someone from Japan because no one from Japan was on the team. So unfortunately I wasn't picked, so I never played on the President's Cup. My good golf was prior, but over the years we have a poor record, the internationals. I'm sure we'll get into that during this discussion, but the special part of it really is representing your country, representing your body of peers, international players, and having the opportunity to pit ourselves against the US team, strong US team every year seems to be stronger and stronger. It hasn't yet reached that that rivalry of, say, a Ryder Cup. Perhaps it will if the internationals start to win. We've performed well the last few times. But what makes it special is that it brings all of the international players, non-European tour players and US players, but all of the rest of us, brings us together for that that 1 week where we battle against the US team, Team USA. But for the year leading in, the camaraderie that's now formed with all those players out on tour, the assistant captains and the captain of all, really improves this this event. I think it's only going to get stronger and stronger as years go on.
A foolish question. I know you wanted to be captain of the international team, but you know, it comes down to you know, sometimes even personalities.
Yeah, Bob, to be honest, back in the day, there wasn't the money around. They weren't throwing money at it like they are now. You know, I was the only assistant captain. There was Peter Thompson and I in 96, Gary and I in 03, 05, 07. Now there's, you know, a handful of assistant captains in all these events. There was the US Tour basically ran the event, and it wasn't until Nick Price, in his second or third time as captain, basically said, hey, look, we need to start changing the rules here and selecting our own captains. And we didn't really have any say until 2017 as to who our captain was going to be. And I had actually hoped, after being assistant captain to Gary in 03 and 05, that I would have been the captain in 07. At Royal Montreal, in fact. But the tour decided that it was good to continue on with Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus, two of the greatest players, well, the greatest player and perhaps top three greatest player of all time. They thought it was better for the event to continue on with these great captains. And unfortunately, I missed out. And then from then on, it went to Greg was next. Greg did a couple of times. Nicky Price did a couple of times. The team chose Nicky Price for his third time in 17, and then since then we've been choosing our own captains. So I'm too old now. I think it should be the younger guys, like, well, even younger than 50, perhaps. I think Jeff Ogilvie will be captain next year at Medina, and I think Adam Scott will be captain in Australia in 28. So I think it's better now that the younger guys that know the players well are captains of the team, and my time has passed. I had a great time as assistant captain four times, though.
Let me ask you this, Ian, and our special guest here on Musings on Golf, the one, the only, Ian Baker Finch. When I think back President's Cup, the most bizarre to me was the one in 03 in South Africa, Tiger Woods and Ernie Els tied after three holes, and Captain Speier and Nicklaus finally agreeing that the cup would be shared.
Mm.
That certainly was an unusual President's Cup, to say the least.
It sure was, and you were right there beside me.
I know.
It was dark. The iris of the cameras open up to allow light in to show what's going on in front of the lens. But it was dark. And I remember I was right there beside Gary and Jack, and Jeff Sluman was Jack Nicklaus's assistant captain for the three times I was assistant captain beside Gary. And Ernie and Tiger had come down that hole for their second playoff hole, and it really was dark. They both made very, very good putts on that green. And the rules of the competition were that whoever held the cup, similar to the Solheim Cup last time it was played, when Europe retained it because it was tied, that the team that held it retained the cup. And Ernie Els heard this being explained on the phone, and he said, to hell with that, let's go. And he started walking to the next tee, and I started walking off with him. And then they said, no, stop. Jack and Gary got together, and Jack said, he was such a great leader, Jack, can we change those rules? Can we share the cup? And the rule was changed that we shared the cup. We had it for a year each. And that was done on the fly right there in front of us and a host of others, as you know, from the media corps and all the players and families. And President Bush was there, and there was so much going on. But that was certainly the most exciting time, I believe, in the President's Cup history there in South Africa at FanCourt.
Ian, let me share a little story about the 2005 President's Cup. I was on the first tee prior to the start. And, of course, you know, Gary Player was there. Jack Nicklaus was there. Bill Clinton was there. I mean, there were just celebrity after celebrity on that first tee. And I'm standing next to President Bush, and I'm a nervous wreck. And all of a sudden, I feel a little tap on my ribs. And I look over, and it's President Bush nudging me. And he says, "Bob, isn't this a name dropper's paradise?" I said, "Mr. President, if you think it's a name dropper's paradise, what do you think I must think it is?" But he was such a humble person that he didn't make himself bigger than the President's Cup. And I think that was a great thing.
Yeah, President Bush, 41, was everyone's father or grandfather, wasn't he? He was such an unbelievable man, he and wife, Barbara. And I sat with them a few times at dinners. I did a couple of charity events with them down at Ocean Reef, just south of where I live here in Florida. I got to spend some time with him, played a few holes of golf with him there at Ocean Reef during that time. But he was... I remember one night there, just a quick story from 03, he and Mrs. Bush came over to the international team room late one night after dinner. And we were so honored to have them come in. And we're like, "Come in, come in, come in." And he said, "Yeah, all of the American team have gone to bed. This is the fun room. We're going to come over and spend some time with you guys." So we were playing pool and drinking beers and having a great time as a team. And, President Bush and Mrs. Bush stayed with us for a little while, and just a real good man. And he's missed, but he was a big part. And all of the presidents, as you said, President Clinton, President Bush 43, President Obama, have all been such a big part of the President's Cup. And that's as you asked earlier, I guess that's one of the more special parts of the President's Cup is how the presidents and other international leaders all get together.
Well, we're honored to be joined by Ian Baker Finch as we preview the 2024 President's Cup here on Musings on Golf. You mentioned about having fun in the team room that week when President Bush came by, Ian. I'm working for the PGA of America. I moderated press conferences during a couple of Ryder Cups. So I enjoyed the experience that way, but I was never in a team room, and very few were in a team room. Can you give a sense of what a week is like, or at least a night is like in a team room for an event like the President's Cup, in terms of meetings that you might have, or how you build the camaraderie? What happens? And I'm also interested, are pairings for the team competitions, are they kind of done in advance, or is some of that determined based on how players get along in the team room, like on a Monday night or Tuesday night?
You're obviously thinking about pairings well before, especially these days with six captains' picks. I know, yeah. Speaking with my CBS comrade and great friend Trevor Immelman, who was captain last time, assistant captain to Ernie in 19, and then he's assistant captain again now, Royal Montreal. He was on one of my teams in 05 as a pick. Earned his way on again in 07 at Royal Montreal. So I've known Trevor through various President's Cups, and I've known Trevor well. It's different now than it was back then. It was all about camaraderie, having a good time, talking about tomorrow, commiserating over the day's play if you played poorly, congratulating each other on good play if you played well and had good results. It was a family time too. My daughters were there, my wife was there, all of the wives of the players were there with family in the team room at night times, and at dinners. We used to go to lots of dinners, functions, not so much now. Golf's changed so much. And as I said, there's so much more money involved. There's four or five or six assistant captains. There's more money to be thrown at the team, and there's less functions because the captain's now saying, hold on a second, my guys want to be ready for 36 holes tomorrow. We don't need to be going to the fourth function of the week. So there's less and less of that. I remember back in 96, we went to a function every night, and we went to so many great functions. We were there in DC. Robert Trent Jones was the host course in 94 and 96, and again in 05. To me, it was a lot of fun. And I think the players had a lot of fun. And we had an unbelievable team, and Tomo was a great captain. Less now, I think maybe more strategy sessions now, maybe some talk more about, I know there's a lot more data and statistics involved now in selecting the teams and selecting the pairings. Before, it was more about personalities and who could use whose ball in foursomes, and that things like that were more what we thought about in selecting our teams. But it's a fun environment. It's certainly a team building environment. I think Ernie Els and Trevor Immelman especially have done a fantastic job of that. And I'm sure Mike Weir will continue that tradition. He's a great champion, Mike Weir. I think he'll be fantastic at Royal Montreal, as he was on my team there in 07. So it's four of the best weeks of my life, Kelly, to be honest with you. At the President's Cup, I absolutely had an absolute ball. I cried at the dinner at the final every year because I had three losses and a tie, and I left my heart out there. I kind of understand how wives and family feel, because they have no ability to change the result of their loved one or husband or son or whatever. And that's how I felt as the assistant captain. I did everything I possibly could to be as good as I could and to do whatever I could for the team. I'd go make them a peanut butter and jelly sandwich at the turn and run it out to them. I'd be bringing towels out in the rain. I laid my heart out. And then to have such a poor result, I remember I was always very emotional because I felt like I'd left the team down. And that's the feeling. And so as a player on team golf, you feel even more that way. You're in there in the trenches with your buddies, and you don't want to let them down.
You're obviously invested heavily on the international side. If you kind of maybe put your shoes on the American team for a minute or two, and it's been very unusual with these annual competitions for the Americans. So for the President's Cup, the U.S. is 12-1-1. And yet, in the Ryder Cup, since all of Europe came in 1979, the U.S. is 9-12-1. Right? Mm. The Euros really have dominated.
Yeah.
Can you get? But you're out there. You cover these guys week in and week out. Can you give your thoughts and account on what's an incredibly vast difference in results year to year since the President's Cup started for the Americans? That is.
Yes. Yeah. It's an amazing thing, really, because the American team, majority of the times, I can't say every time, but majority of the times is a stronger team. They're expected to win. I think the European side have done a remarkable job over the last 30 years or more of continuing the belief that they're the underdog, and coming in like they're the underdog, but really in the back of their minds, they know that they've got their measure. It's been interesting to watch how many times the European teams have taken down such an awesomely strong American team. Like in Paris, there's no way anyone would have thought that the European team would have beat the American team as strong as it was, but you know, did it easily from memory anyway. And then the other side of the coin here, the juxtaposition of how it works for the U.S., they are so strong in the competition against us at the President's Cup. Hopefully we can turn that around as our results have been better since Pricey was captain and on through Ernie and Trevor and now Mike. Hopefully we can turn that around and sort of make the US team sort of think similar against Europe, that, hey, we've got to play really, really well if we're going to beat these guys. We can't let them win. Europe, for whatever reason, that European team has just had some great leaders, some players that every year stood up and earned their points. And it's a way of life for the European players, the Ryder Cup. They would give up a major to play on another Ryder Cup, I believe. It means more to them. And I think that's the one thing, if I may say, that the Europeans have over us as an international team. And I know Ernie and Trevor especially have been working on this. It's to build a unified team, a shield, a battalion to go into battle, right? And in the past, it's been a mixed mash of, I remember one year, there was 9 different countries, 8 different languages represented on the international team. It's pretty hard to come together when 3 of the guys don't speak English for a start. Hmm. So it's getting stronger and stronger because most of them play on the US tour. And I believe that the international team, as I said, came close at Royal Melbourne in 19. It came close at Quail Hollow in 22. I think it'll be close this time, and hopefully we can edge out that US team. But we certainly come in as underdogs, but we just have to have that same belief that the European team has been so good at achieving over the last 3 or 4 decades.
Well, let's talk for a minute about this week. Jim Furyk is the U.S. captain. Mike Weir, representing his home country in Canada, is the captain of the international team. 2 questions. What do you think each guy needs to do well to set up his team to have a great shot at winning? And 2, does the course there at Royal Montreal, does it favor one side over the other?
I haven't gone into depth on how Royal Montreal favors one side or the other. I can certainly call Captain Mike or Trevor anytime and say, hey, can you pass on a little bit of your data? They've got a lot of data. They know exactly what's going on with their team and the other team. And that goes a lot into selecting the pairings. One of the great things about the President's Cup is you alternate picks. It's not putting forth a team, which I think is fantastic. A better side of the President's Cup to the Ryder Cup, for sure. I think Royal Montreal favors accuracy over distance a little bit more than Quail Hollow. I believe Trevor was telling me that they had a lot of data and they wanted big hitters at Quail Hollow. I think what let us down at Quail Hollow for the internationals was the putting. I believe the US team was 28 shots better than average, and the international team were 5 worse than average. So there was a 33 shot swing there just in putting based on statistics and data. I'm not sure who it favors when it comes to that accuracy and distance. As I said, I haven't done a deep dive into the stats, but I do believe the camaraderie within the international team is so strong now and has strengthened so much over the last decade. Pricey really kicked this off, I believe, that this could be the year. We've got 4 Koreans on the team that I'm sure they'll be put together. 3 Aussies that know each other well. I'm sure Christian will probably go in there with them. 3 Canadians. And obviously Hideki, who's really the leader of the team. He's playing great. Hopefully his back holds up. So I think Trevor and his assistants need to keep that tight-knit bond going with their team, which they've done throughout the year. I've only heard great things. The caddies are a big part of this too. The caddies are a huge part of team competition, and I know they're really, really close with their players, and all of the caddies get involved in all of this as well. So the US team, boy, they just need to keep playing the way they've been playing. You know, when you look at Shoffley, Scheffler, Morikawa, Clark, Fagala, Cantley, that's the top 6. And then their picks, Harmon, Henley, Keegan, Burnsie, Finau, Homer. Man, that's just a number. You know you've got a great team when you're leaving Justin Thomas and Billy Horschel and Akshay Bhatia off your team. If you're leaving those three off, how good a team do you have? So they're going to be very hard to beat, and they know that. Boy, some of them have just had unbelievable years, especially Scotty, of course. But it'll be a great battle. I really do. I think Royal Montreal will stand up to the distance. As I said, you need to have good accuracy, good placement around there. The fairways run, I'll think of the rough a lot. There's some water, some dog legs. It's a good venue. And the Canadians, we just got to get the Canadians behind the Canadians. Hopefully our three Canadians on the team can play well, because that will stand us in good stead with the crowds. We really need the Canadians to get out there. It's a shame. I would have loved to have seen Nick Taylor, Adam Hadwin on the team as well. But Cam Davis as well, is the Aussie. He played well and won towards the end of the season. So both teams have strong teams when you think of the guys that didn't make the team.
Well, that was Ian Baker Finch. We're so proud to have him on Musings on Golf. One personal question, Ian. Is it true that your dad was given 100 acres of land in Australia to build a golf course, and that's how you learned to play?
That's 100% correct, Bob. It was back in the 60s, and Australia was really starting to... basically, Arnold Palmer and then the Big Three a little later on, Jack and Gary, they made golf popular for the blue-collar workers. My dad was a farmer. He'd returned from the Second World War. He was an electrician for the area as well, and he was president of the Lions Club and the Returned Servicemen's League Club. He was just a hard-working man. And he and his mates, the farmers, they just loved Arnold Palmer. And the nearest golf course was about 15 miles away, a little 9-hole course over Woodford. And Dad and a couple of the other guys had the idea that maybe they could get a land grant from the Forestry Department. So Dad went down to Brisbane, the capital city, a couple of hours away, and he went to the Forestry Department and led the case that maybe you could give us some land adjacent to the Returns Servicemen's League Club in Biewa in Australia on the Sunshine Coast. And they gave a 100-acre plot that was actually a swamp where they couldn't plant pine trees for the paper mills in the area. And the farmers came in and they dug out a big dam and they dug out lots of drains and they drained the property and built a little 9-hole golf course and drive down on the tractor 6 miles from the farm with my dad and ride around on the bulldozers and whatever as we built this little farm course. And got me started in the game. I was 9 or 10. I got my first set of clubs when I was 12 and never looked back. Just loved the game ever since.
It's amazing when I look back and note that Peter Thompson, Jack Nicklaus, they both had profound influences on your career, right?
Yeah. Tomo was a wonderful mentor. As he was getting ready to come play the Champions Tour, I was starting to play well in Australia and getting ready to go play overseas in the early 80s. And, of course, I learned to play by myself reading Jack Nicklaus's book, Golf My Way. And I think a lot of guys my age, Nick Faldo included, learned golf from that book. I'd have it on the range there hitting balls. And we didn't really have a range. It was just out on the course. I practiced from the rough most times, so I didn't make divots in the fairways. And Jack's book there, right? And I was just learning from Jack, just watching all the pictures in the book and trying to do what Jack did. And and then Tomo took my high fade that Jack had developed and turned it into a lower draw in the early 80s and helped me a lot. He was a great man, Peter Thompson. I was honored to be his co-captain in 96 at RTJ for the President's Cup. But more than that, he was a good friend. And his wife, Mary, is still alive and strong and fit and healthy and still doing well back in Melbourne in Australia. I know the family well. You know, he's been a great loss. And Jack, of course, just lives around the corner. He's been a great influence in our life here in Florida. He helped us when we first moved over here 25 years ago to the area, got us into the Benjamin School, and my daughters were both just here this morning. And my eldest daughter, Haley, her daughter is now in preschool at the Benjamin School as a four-year-old. So we're entrenched in the area now as well in Jack's hometown.
Well, we'd be remiss if we didn't take time to discuss that magical week in 1991 at Royal Birkdale. You didn't get off to a great start. You were 21st after the first two rounds.
Yeah, I shot 71-71. Par 70, of course, Royal Birkdale. It was hard. It was windy. The greens weren't great, but it wasn't bad. I think top 30. I played with Fuzzy Zeller the first couple of rounds. And anyway, the next day I played really, really well. I'd been playing great all summer. I just lost in the playoff, as you know, Bob, the week before, up at Teddy Mingola's course up there at the just out of Boston in Worcester. And before then, I'd won that tournament at Oakmont, that big event that we played up there. So I was in good form. So I still believed I had a chance. And then I shot 64 on the Saturday, finished eagle birdie. And then on the Sunday, went out in 29, had a 5-shot lead coming home, and just hit fairways and greens and 2-putted every hole and came home the champ. But it was Royal Birkdale was the winner that week in a lot of ways. It was such a tough test, and the weather changed every day. I think I had the umbrella up, a sweater, a vest, and off on rain gear, off on. It was the typical Open Championship weather week, that's for sure.
Hey, Ian, question for you. When you go into a third round like that in a major championship and you're not really in the mix, so as you said, you shot 64. In your mind, do you say, okay, I've got to shoot this number. I need to do this to give myself a chance on Sunday.
Yeah, it's easy to say a number. It's more I have to go out and play well. I have to focus early. I have to do what I have to do. I have to trust myself. It's always good if you can hole a putt early, even if it's a 6-footer for par, something that just gives you that, yeah, that's what I need. It's funny, but the year before I had shot 64 on the Saturday, 8-under par at St. Andrews, and that got me into the last group on Sunday. I played with Nick Faldo in 1990 at St. Andrews when Nick won in record fashion. So to shoot, I did have that number in my mind, but only because of that the year before I had done it. And I thought, well, if I can shoot 64 today, I think 2-under was leading. I was 2-over, but 2-under was leading. I was only 4 back. And I figured, yeah, if I can shoot 64, I'll be right up there in the final few groups. And as it turned out, I was in the final group again with Mark O'Meara.
We're close to wrapping up our time with the great Ian Baker Finch here on Musings on Golf. Hey, I'm wondering, how did you actually get started in broadcasting, and wondering if someone, whether it was whoever, if someone mentored you along the way as you transitioned from player on the course to broadcaster in the booth and broadcaster covering the action on the course as well?
Once again, long story. As you can tell, I don't give short answers. One of our producers on Channel 7, Graham, Rocky, he doesn't like to be called Rocky, but we used to call him Rocky. He'd always ask me up to the booth after I'd played. He liked me. He liked my style. He liked having a player up in the booth. I think he used to invite Greg up there a lot as well. And he always said to me, he said, you know, you've got a future in this if ever you don't play well. I said, oh, yeah, well, I won't have to worry about that. As I said to Bob before, you know, when you're playing well, you always feel like you're always going to play well. But that helped along the way. And he would be quite disappointed with me if I didn't go up sometimes. He'd ask me up and say, hey, I need to go practice or whatever. But anyway, that helped. And then when I started to play poorly and I stopped playing at the Open Championship in 96, he and a couple of other producers back home asked me if I'd come home and do all of the Australian tournaments for the summer at the end of 96. So October, November, December, January, February, there were 12 tournaments on TV in Australia. And I worked for four different networks, four different producers, four directors, four different teams.
Oh, geez.
So I learned on the run. There's nothing like on-the-job training, as you guys know in what you're doing. You can't study for this. You can prepare, and we all love the process. But being thrown in to the fire or being thrown into the pool and learning how to swim, I didn't see myself when I first came into this job. I didn't see myself as an announcer or an analyst. I saw myself as a player. And I came in and I sat in that seat. And sometimes I wouldn't get there. It took 5 minutes before air and the producer was going crazy. And I'm like, hey, I was on the range. I was getting stories. I was talking to the players. Ernie Els just gave me a great snippet, you know. So I saw myself as a player. And I think that then I was successful. I was popular. And Jack Graham, who was working for ABC, he was Terry Jastrow's right-hand man for a while, and then he took over the golf. He chose Mike Tirico and Curtis Strange to be his lead. And he came to me and he said, hey, I'd like you to help out at the Open Championship, which I did for them in 96, 97. And then after this, working for Australian TV in 96, 97, he said, hey, if you'd like to come work for us in the States, I know your family's gone, moved back. If you'd like to come work for us, we can make it work where we can do four tournaments, some time off, four more, some time off. So I traveled back and forth for 2 years from Australia. I joined ABC because of Jack's insistence in 1998. And I did 8 years with ABC and ESPN. So big thanks to Jack Graham for giving me that opportunity. I never thought I would need the job because I thought I'd figure out what was going on with my golf. But I just had my heart torn out in that last year or two of trying to struggle through. I gave up 5 years exemption on the tour. I still had 5 years, you know, full exemption on the PGA Tour. I just said, no, I can't do it anymore. I wasn't earning any money. The contracts weren't big. Not like today, you'd probably battle through, wouldn't you? But the TV's been good. Been doing it since 98, so I must have fooled somebody. I've stayed in the game for a while.
Ian, two final questions from me. Yeah, you haven't fooled anybody. You've been terrific. In all those years with CBS, I'm interested. Covered a lot of Masters, a lot of PGA Championships, a lot of tour events that you've worked. I wonder if there's been a special moment for you in terms of an event that stands out, somebody who won, maybe you were particularly happy for a winner. Has there been, whether it was Tiger winning the Masters, late in his career, has there been a moment or two that really stood out for you for whatever reason personally?
Yes, and once again, there's a few that I can point to, but 18 years now at CBS, next January we kick back off, be my 19th season. 19's my lucky number. Had the chance to play with Tiger when he won his first US Junior. Hughes Norton called me and said, hey, I've got this young kid that I think you should have a game with. So Mark O'Meara and I took him around a couple of days at Isleworth. So I've had a very good relationship with Tiger ever since then. That was back in 91, and so I was Open champ. Played with him a little bit in 96 as he came out to play, a couple of times in 95 as an amateur. And then I've got to cover his entire career. So his Grand Slam win at St. Andrews was a special time. I think the most relevant championship win of all time is 2019, Tiger's win at the Masters. Got to be a part of that, working alongside Nick Faldo and the great Jim Nantz for all of those years. That to me was the most special moment, seeing Tiger come back to win. The two greatest moments at the Masters was 97 when he won his first, winning by 12, I think. And then in 19, coming back from injury and everything. So, but for me, always watching the Aussies win majors, cried when Adam Scott won 2013, first Australian to win the Masters. Remember saying from down under to on top of the world, Jim, as he hold that putt. Jimmy threw it down to me. I was shivering and cold down on the 12th tower. I'd been sitting there for a couple of hours. And he said, Ian, you've got to have some perspective here. And that's all I could get out. I was so emotional about it. And then in 15, when Jason Day won at Whistling Straits, edging out Jordan Spieth there at PGA and getting to number one in the world. So those two moments for the Aussies, always like seeing my mates win or the Aussies win or the guys that have worked hard to get a win, you know, that the guys that I know that have really deserve it, they're special moments. But it's been 18 years of special moments, calling the PGA and the Masters and 20 other tour events. It's been a wonderful career. And the opportunity to work with so many great stars, not just the analysts and mates that came from golf, but, Mike Tirico at ABC, Terry Gannon, Roger Twible, Bill McAtee, Vern Lundquist, oh my God, and of course, Jimmy Neds, you know, that's doesn't get any better than that.
Well, it does not. Before I throw it over to Mr. Bupka to close things out, I get the pleasure of asking sort of my final question each show of a dream foursome. If you had three individuals, Ian, whether they're living or deceased, who you could play sort of a magical round of golf with, who would those three be and where would you play?
Well, I can give you two if I could. I'd love to play with my two brothers and my dad at Beaver Golf Club. Go back, you know, 50 years and have a quick round. Even if it was just the old nine holes, it's 18 now, but that'd be a lot of fun. That's passed on. My brothers are still alive, older than me, but I think that'd be a fun day. The big three, maybe add Tiger in there, would play a fivesome. But I think I've had an opportunity to play with a lot of the great entrepreneurs of our time, and I played a few holes with Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer at Pebble Beach a few years back. I think I would really love to have a game with Elon Musk. I'd like to spend 4 or 5 hours with Elon Musk and pick his brain. I mean, is there anyone more genius in this world? Whether you like his politics or not, I don't even know what his politics are, but boy, he's got some great ideas. So might just play a twosome with him.
you'd learn a lot in 4 hours, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I've listened to a few podcasts that he's been a part of, and oh my gosh, he's on a different wavelength.
I guarantee you one thing, Ian. You would learn a lot more from Musk than you did from me at Colonial.
Bob. But I probably wouldn't have as much fun. It was always great being with you.
Oh, you're too kind, and thank you so much for doing this. Ian, you're one of the special people in golf. Everybody loves your work. They love you as a person, and you certainly have done a lot of great things. And being an Open champion is pretty darn special in my book. Thanks for being with us, Ian.
Thanks very much, Bob. Thank you, Kelly. It's been a pleasure. Anytime. Thank you.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. Certainly hope you all enjoyed that interview with Ian Baker Finch as much as Bob and I did in spending time with Ian. A terrific guy and great insights into the President's Cup. We thank Ian very much for his time. Next week, we have a surprise guest for you as we recap the President's Cup, someone who knows all about the President's Cup and the inner workings of it. For my good buddy, Bob Bupka, who I cannot wait to get back behind the mic and joining me next week, Kelly Elbin signing off on Musings on Golf. Enjoy President's Cup.